I've always liked the book of Timothy, maybe because my brother is named Timothy. We're going to skip 2 Thessalonians, might come back to it, but it's a pretty brief letter, kind of in some ways echoing 1 Thessalonians and picking up some later themes. So we'll focus on 1 Timothy. And I want to ask you, as we do this letter, what are, in your mind, the biggest factors that produce conflict in organizations that you're a part of? Because I think that what 1 Timothy is about is not only some really awesome theology, but it's about trying to train Timothy to be a leader and to understand how he's going to have to help this emerging church kind of put some structure on itself so that it can be really an effective bearer of the good news. So it's a little bit about church leadership. I mean, the letter clearly, but the podcast today is thinking a little bit more about how we can be aware of conflict in organizations and how might we as individuals, as Christians, be called to think about our role and how we respond to stress in organizations that we're a part of.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
The saying is sure. Whoever aspires to the office of bishop desires a noble task. Now a bishop must be above reproach, married only once, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, an apt teacher, not a drunkard, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, and not a lover of money. He must manage his own household well, keeping his children submissive and respectful in every way. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how can he take care of God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may be puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace and the snare of the devil. Deacons, likewise, must be serious, not double-tongued, not indulging in much wine, not greedy for money. They must hold fast to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. And let them first be tested. Then if they prove themselves blameless, let them serve as deacons. Women, likewise, must be serious, not slanderers, but temperate, faithful in all things. Let deacons be married only once, and let them manage their children and their households well. For those who serve well as deacons gain a good standing for themselves and a great boldness in the faith that is in Christ Jesus.
In organizations you've been a part of, and that could be the Little League team, that could be a church, that could be the place where you work, that could be some nonprofit you volunteer your time with, why is it that people don't always get along and there is conflict? Why is it that there is conflict in organizations? Much of the New Testament is written by Paul, these letters, responding to conflict and trying to address it. And we looked over this in, say, especially like the first letter to the Corinthians and the second, where there's a group in the church that is wealthy and believes that because they're rich, that they don't have to play by the rules. Likewise, in Galatia, there is a group that may actually not have been rich, may have actually been poor, but they are holding fast to the laws of the Jewish customs and traditions and therefore believe that they're better. So you've got in one case group that thinks they're better because they don't need the rules. Another group thinks they're better because they have the rules. And if you've been paying attention in the last 25 years to sort of American theological debates, you're like, okay, we haven't really moved much beyond Corinth and Galatia. And so in some ways, these are really kind of theologically and socially kind of fascinating for us. And also Paul, when he's addressing these, kind of brings out some serious theological artillery where he, you know, ends up talking about the cross of Christ is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those of us being saved, it is the power of God. Or love is patient, love is kind. Or God gave us a ministry of reconciliation. Or it is no longer I who lives, but Christ who lives in me. And so the conflicts that are in Corinth and Galatia end up kind of shaping kind of Western thought and history, you could say, and fascinating and inspiring. But I think what's happening in 1 Timothy may actually be just as relatable to what we struggle with, especially kind of in our everyday lives. Yes, we may have a problem in certain communities where rich people think that they don't have to obey the rules and that other people get super pious over their rule-abiding tendencies. Sure, we still have those, and those can be sources of conflict in churches, but even in other facets of life. But what Paul is going to write to Timothy about here is Paul is going to kind of counsel Timothy in how he can develop and how he can start to have leaders in place. And one of the things that's fascinating is that oftentimes scholars don't necessarily agree to the authenticity of 1 Timothy. It's kind of one of those, like, is it in, is it out kind of letters. My sense is that it's because the people who are scholars haven't spent as much time trying to build institutions. And if you're actually building institutions, you recognize very quickly that what Paul is talking about and what he's trying to go for in writing to Timothy would make a lot of sense to somebody who was trying to figure out how, as these churches grew from just like one or two families into kind of more complex organisms and organizations, how you could possibly have leadership and structure. Last year, I had a family reunion, and it was 23 people in one a big house for 5 days and four nights. And in defense of my family, this particular kind of lodging arrangement wasn't the ideal. There were a couple things at the last minute we had to change. And so everybody, you know, really tried to make it work. But what I discovered, what we all observed, is what could have been predicted. And that is that when you have people like that who aren't necessarily used to making decisions together every day, living in the same house, suddenly conflict is really rife for happening, because everything, like deciding like what we're going to do that afternoon, suddenly becomes this hugely complicated process because there isn't a defined kind of structure. There's not even necessarily any sense of kind of how we're going to do this, or if people don't do it, what their cost is. And without that kind of institutional clarity, now you're just hoping that people's triggers aren't kind of, or people's buttons aren't pushed too hard. And there were, again, some beautiful moments, but I bring it up just to say, as soon as you get beyond kind of like one kind of family unit that's used to working together, even if you just get 23 people who all kind of have a base love and all have a common story and an interest in making this work, you're just going to run into trouble really quickly. And so I think rather than sort of saying like, oh, this had to have been a later development because, you know, deacons or ministers, these are much later terms, which is so funny because the only evidence we have of what the first century of the church like looked like is pretty much Paul's letters. So to say that like bishops or what some translators will call overseers, deacons, or some translators call them servants or ministers, like to say that like these are sort of later developments, what information do we have outside of like the letters of the New Testament? There's not a lot of stuff in the first century that's out there that didn't end up in the Bible. But I think, again, there are real concerns what Paul is addressing here. And I want to reflect on them with you, because when Paul is kind of talking here about kind of what he expects out of leaders and how he wants this to function, I think this is addressing what I see as kind of the three most likely culprits for conflict in an organization. And you could, again, include the stuff that happens in Galatia where some people get self-righteous because of obedience to the law, or Corinth, where some people, because of their particular race or class or ethnicity, feel they're superior to others. So there can be all sorts of those kind of dynamics at work. But if you take those away a little bit, or just kind of look beyond them, I think you end up with a lot of the concerns that Paul is trying to address to Timothy here in his letter to his first letter. So when I look at organizations, and I've been a part of churches or other things, one of the biggest reasons why there is conflict is because there isn't clarity of expectations of people and accountability. So let's just imagine that we work at a firm together, and it's Friday, and somebody says, it's 4 o'clock, you know, as the sign says, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, I'm going to start packing up because I want to go to happy hour tonight. And they'll say, but this report isn't done and we need to get it done. And the person says, well, you know, then you guys can finish it or we can leave it till Monday, but I'm just not going to do it. Well, this is going to produce a lot of conflict. Even worse, if that employee who checked out has no consequences. Likewise, if you're on, say, a music ensemble or a sports team, and everybody shows up for practices and somebody doesn't show up for practices, well, you know, can they still participate? And if they're allowed to participate without practicing and they mess up, man, that's going to just really ruin the vibe for everybody. That's going to produce conflict. When you don't have clarity of expectations and likely then accountability towards those expectations, people are going to get out of whack really quickly in an organization. Most people can tolerate people doing different amounts or different kind of tasks, but then there would expect to be some sort of like different compensation or different sort of reward for your different efforts. So if you don't have clarity of expectation about what people should be doing, you inevitably will have conflict. You know, again, somebody thinks, oh, that person should be doing X, Y, and Z as part of their job, and the person doesn't think it's X, Y, and Z. Conflict's happening. And this can also happen just in families too, right? It's your responsibility to clean the dishes. No, where does it say that, right? So again, all across the board, all kind of organizations, from a husband and wife to siblings, all the way up to sort of huge multinational corporations, you're going to need clarity of expectation. And that's what Paul is trying to do here in his letter. He's trying to say, hey, like this is what we want from the people here. Right? This is kind of like, yeah, this is kind of starting to be the kind of the person they are. And even I would say a little bit kind of starting to lean into their task. But again, trying to just draw out that there are these different kind of roles and they're going to have different expectations with these different roles. The next thing is that you need clarity of not just what we might say responsibility, but also what we might even want to call lane. The dread of every human is the team project where nobody really knows exactly who is doing what. And then you spend all of your time kind of bumping into each other, thinking that what you've been asked to do is yours and somebody else thinks it's theirs to do. So for instance, when I was on my internship to be a pastor, I said to my senior pastor, my supervisor, hey, I'd really like to put together a sermon series. And he's like, I really don't like sermon series. But, you know, you're an intern, go for it. So I put together one, and he looks over, he's like, this is fine, sure. Well, then while he's on break after Easter, he's taking his vacation, he decides to read my email, really for the first time, really kind of get serious about it. And then while he's on vacation, sends an email to us who are preaching and saying, this is the new, sermon series. And I was really offended because I felt that I had worked really hard and suddenly was in my lane. And it didn't feel like we were a team. It just felt like, okay, this is what he wants to do. Now, admittedly, I was an intern. He was a supervisor. But my point is that when we don't have clarity about kind of like, this is my lane and this is like kind of what I can do, there's just going to be conflict. And so you see here, like when you have an organization and you don't know kind of how hard people should work, kind of, so you sort of say how much they're supposed to work, and you don't sort of have people having clarity about kind of what people's responsibilities are relative to each other, again, conflict is just going to arise. It'll be like weeds. And, you know, if people don't know, again, these chains of command, kind of who has the final say, you know, when they're allowed to kind of have bandwidth to do their thing and when they're supposed to check in and so forth. Again, this is just going to produce conflict for people. And this is true in Little League. This is true in massive corporations. It's also true in churches. And what I find is that in many cases, there's a third reason why conflict is produced. And this is that you have immaturity of people. And I'm going to define specifically what I mean by immaturity. But let me just say that before I do, I want to add a caveat here. Most times when there is conflict in an organization, people assume it is because of people's immaturity. People instantly start to blame people's deficiencies of their sort of character. And I do actually believe that immaturity of people is a cause of real tension and conflict in an organization. But I think a lot of times the issue is likely structural in that somebody didn't know what was expected of them and somebody didn't understand the boundary between them and somebody else's role. And I think that in most cases, if those were solved, you could get through a lot of other conflict. But when those aren't solved and those aren't clarified, then you start to have sort of the immaturity multiplier where people's own kind of tendencies to kind of respond and not respond well just starts to explode. And so Paul here is trying to say, look, you know, here's who we want. Here's what's expected of them and really what kind of character we want, because we know that ultimately we need people who are mature to handle these things. So again, when it comes to conflict in an organization, if you have a system where there are expectations and accountability, where there's clarity around boundaries between different kind of people, and you have people that are mature, you're probably not going to have a ton of conflict. And it seems that that's what Paul is aiming towards here in how he's talking about some of these early church leadership positions and kind of what kind of qualifications does he want for them. I want to define, though, a little bit more what I mean by immaturity. I believe that everybody has a reaction to bad news or stressful situations. I don't think we can avoid this. And most of us have kind of different reactions. And while some of those reactions we could say are not constructive, not helpful at all, such as turning towards chemical substances to deal with the pain, I think most of us, again, have a reaction. And for some of us, that's to get angry. Some of us, that's to avoid. Some of us, that's to overly be placating. Some of us, that's to become overly submissive. Some of us, that's to withdraw to kind of analyze the problem. Some of us, it's just to kind of work harder. Again, there can be all sorts of ways in which we process the stress of the situation and how other people are interacting with us. I'm not sure if any of those reactions themselves are immature, but what I do think is immature is when we aren't able to see how our stress response causes stress in others. What I mean is that, like, okay, somebody hears some really bad news. a shipment didn't go through, or there's a new tariff increase, or we just lost a family in our organization because they moved away, or now the school system isn't going to allow us to advertise the way we used to for our, you know, like program, blah, blah, blah. So these are all things that are bad news and they cause stress in us. How do we respond to them? Again, I think most of us get it that when we as humans kind of hear bad news or have tough situations, that we might not in the short term kind of have a meaningfully helpful response. I don't think most of us judge instant reactions, but it's rather like, okay, so the person got angry. Well, it was a bad situation. Did they recognize, though, how angry they were? Were they aware of just how strongly they were coming off? Were they aware of how that reaction, however much it might have startled people the first time, really didn't get that reaction or wasn't helpful the second or third time? The person who becomes hyper-focused on task, is that really, well, in the short term, that might be great. But how many people did they trip over when they and sort of alienate and just, you know, sever the relationship with because they became so difficult to work with when they were stressed? How many people just, again, fine, the first 24 hours of avoiding it was okay, but, you know, they didn't get in any conflict, but they didn't get anything done. And now we're kind of all behind and, you know, the consequences are worse for it. And I want to offer that immaturity is not necessarily our reaction to a situation, but more our response and sort of how we move ahead. And are we aware enough of how we're responding and then how that is starting to impact other people around us? In his letter to Timothy, at the end of the letter, Paul says to Timothy, that Timothy, I'm just going to quote here from chapter 6. But for you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Fight the fight of faith. And I wonder if it is a challenge for all of us, if we want to pursue righteousness, which includes our relationship with God, but also others. We want to think about love, faith, endurance, and gentleness. We should challenge ourselves, how do I respond to stress? How do I respond to conflict situations? And is that, again, sort of how I'm hardwired, but how might I be more aware of when I've gone too far? Or that my kind of natural behavior, which might be somewhat acceptable as a reaction, cannot be ultimately my response? For again, all leaders at any level are we're ultimately going to face challenges, and those challenges are going to produce a reaction in us. What are ways in which you can be aware then of that reaction and its unhelpful ways so that you can begin to respond then in a way that is benefiting of the whole? And maybe, just maybe, like Timothy, might be essential in how you help be a leader in any church that you're a part of, and a witness to the salvation of Jesus.